The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
Welcome to 9/11 Freefall. I'm the host, Andy Steele. Today we're joined by Michael Penguay. He's a longtime 9/11 activist. He's also a member of Montreal 9/11 Truth. We're going to be hearing about some of the great work that they've done over the many years that this movement has existed. And it has been a long time. I mean, good God, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of this event that we were all lied to about. So we're going to be learning more about Michael today. Michael, welcome to 9/11 Freefall.
Oh, thanks. A great opportunity. Thanks, Andy. Great to be here.
So please tell our audience more about you. And a question I ask every new guest, tell us where you were on the day of 9/11 when you heard the news and what woke you up to what really happened on that day.
Yeah, sure. I remember that day very vividly. I got up from bed and probably was maybe 9 o'clock in the morning. I turned on a TV set. And I remember the towers being hit. That's what I recall. And immediately what came to my mind, I wasn't really well-versed yet on politics as I became in later years, but immediately I thought, oh, a blowback. That's for all what the Americans are doing around the world. I guess it's a blowback. Well, now they're paying the price for it. But I really never took the inside job thing seriously until about 2003, after meeting a fellow who eventually became a friend of mine, who's well read on politics. He's a political consultant and a McGill University law graduate, and then he just opened up a can of worms for me in 2003. So I began really taking more seriously in 2003.
Well, that was a tumultuous year, and it's hard to even say that now because we're in a very tumultuous time right now, but I do remember when the lead up to the Iraq war was going on and we started to see divisions in that whole exterior that we showed after September 11th, that united front to go fight the entire world to avenge this thing. Some people started questioning the upcoming war and why we're going to Iraq when they had nothing to do with September 11th. God bless those people. I praise those people because that was the beginnings of all of it for me, and it took me a little bit longer to wake up, a few more years before I saw what was really going on, but this movement has really built, and it's thanks to a lot of people like you who I understand was in it very early on when the movement was just getting started. For me, I found it amazing that there were so many other people who decided to not only agree with the 9/11 evidence and take it into their minds, but also to do something about it as well. Was it that way for you? I mean, did you have other people around you already, or did you find them as you started to speak out about 9/11?
Yeah, I started. No, I was really all alone. And what happened was, I got a lot of help eventually with people all around me who I've lost contact with, because really I've been out of the loop with 9/11 activism for now maybe like 8 years, if not more. I just to let it go. It was really, really draining. And in general, I find, my opinion, that the 9/11 Truth Movement eventually died down, and the contacts that I used to be in contact with across Canada and U.S., them just lost contact, you know. So, going back when I first started, it was in late 2003, and then my friend Ken, who was well-versed in politics and stuff, and he had mentioned that he had bumped into Michael Rupert, because I think Michael Rupert was just finishing, a lecture either in Toronto or in Ottawa, and I don't know how Ken, my friend Ken, got to meet him, but I think Michael Rupert, was going to cross through Montreal as he went back to the United States. So they met up, and they had a big discussion, and so Rupert told my friend Ken some information about 9/11 and so forth. And then when I was speaking to Ken in 2003, going to Toronto for the convention of the then Progressive Conservative Party of Canada, and at that time I just started getting involved in political activism because I was involved with the Progressive Conservatives. At that time, we had a candidate I was supporting. His name was David Orchard, who was critical of free trade and the NAFTA agreements and corporate globalization. And so on the ride to Toronto, my friend Ken, we started chit-chatting, and he mentioned Michael Rupert and so forth. And he goes, Mike, yeah, it was an inside job. Are you serious? So since I got back home there in Montreal, I immediately went to FromTheWilderness.com, and I started looking up what Rupert was all talking about, and I immediately bought his video, 9/11 with Truth and Lies, and I got hooked right away, and I was really overwhelmed with the information. I didn't know what to do, and I was anxious to do something. I quite did not know what to do, and then eventually I heard of Barry Zwicker's one-week conference in Toronto. That was, I think, part of the big conference that went on in New York City, I think, in 2004. New York had a big conference, and the other one was in Toronto, and then they had another thing in California. So I went to Toronto for 1 week. I took a time off work, and that's where I met eventually Michael Rupert, Dr. Michelle Shostakovsky from Global Research. I heard Dr. Bob, the late Bob Bowman's speech. There's a whole bunch of other people I can't remember. So, and that really inspired me, meeting these people, and wow, this is amazing. It's like, these are not like, just regular folks here. I'm meeting some big time people here. And if they think this was an inside job, because I got to take this more seriously, So I came back home to Montreal, and then I was inspired to do something when I heard of Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 film. So I immediately made up some signs and made a big sandwich board saying 9/11 was an inside job, and I made these hand flyers, and I took Michael Moore's face, and I just twisted it around a bit, and I made these handmade flyers, and I went in front of two movie theaters here in Montreal for about 2 weeks. Every second day or so, and giving out flyers on what I learned at that time in regards to 9/11. So it was a fun experience. Some people, just ignored me. Some were quite hysterical, aggressive, and I remember one time I met a well-known mainstream journalist, a veteran female journalist, and I was chit-chatting with the cinema owner, and he says to me, look, there's Madame Bombardier. She's a well-known journalist here. He goes, give her the flyer. And she turned around and says, what's this garbage? She just threw it down. And he said to me, he just yelled out to her, la bourgeoisie. And so those are the kind of the experiences I had, and one was an American that I met, and he says, I'm an American, and this is bullshit, and he just took my flyer and just threw it on the ground as well. So I apologize, but I met Americans. I met Ellen Mariani in Toronto. She lost her husband in 9/11, and she doesn't believe what the government's telling them, and she wants an investigation. So he just looked at me, in a very aggressive manner, and he didn't want to hear about it, so he just walked away, So, so that was it was not easy. It takes an emotional toll. I find when you're in the street at that time, it was very aggressive. Who are you? And I was tense inside, and really emotional, and I'd lose sometimes sleep because of all the anxiety about it and what to do next. I got to do something, I was always finding something to do. Or where am I going to distribute my flyers tomorrow? So I wasn't really getting anywhere until my girlfriend told me, Michael, why don't you put some money together and do your own conference? So it took a long time. Eventually, in 2006, I held a film presentation here in Montreal, in downtown Montreal, where I presented the Barry's Workers film. And along with a film from Alex Jones. And I also had a little piece in the newspaper from the alternative press, the Montreal Mirror. And it met maybe two or three fellows from that thing. So we corresponded. But then the big thing was, I think, in 2007, when eventually I got Webster Tarpley to come to Montreal. And that's when I made a lot of, contacts and friends and who then jumped in and helped me out a lot. Then it just like steamrolled afterwards. Then I made contact with Professor Shostakovsky, who just lives outside here, the director of global research. And so then really things kicked in afterwards. Then Michel Sudovsky was a great help. I did two, three, four lectures with him, and then of course he co-funded it. And we had David Ray Griffin come to speak, Richard Gage twice, David Ray Griffin twice too. We had Annie Michon, a former at MI5, come to speak. We had Cynthia McKinney for the 10th anniversary with Wayne Madsen come and speak. Things took time, but eventually it was 2007 to 2010 and 11 that I was really involved a lot with other people. But from 2003 to 2007, I was really just like on my own, just like, you know, on the street and doing little things on my own, and not really getting any traction with fellow activists.
I was the same way in the early days. I didn't do a lot of street stuff. I would sometimes on the anniversary, but I would write. I would send it to alternative media, and I didn't get involved with AE until about 2010, I want to say, when they were asking for volunteers for a particular project that they were doing. So I know that feeling. I know exactly what it's like, and to be the only person in your entire circle or your entire geography or geographical region to know about this, be talking about it. I remember the dismissive attitudes. I mean, everybody is now hyper-political for one side or the other these days, but back then, nobody really cared. I mean, you had an anti-war movement that was largely pacified when Obama got into office here in the United States, and then there was that whole period where people just giggled at their cell phones and looked at you like you were a funny picture on the wall when you spoke about this stuff. I find your story about the journalist woman very interesting, because if she's a well-known person, famous, I imagine she gets handed a lot of stuff. It seems like the easiest way to blow someone off is just say, okay, thank you, I'll look at it, or just say thank you and move on. But she actually took issue with it. She said, what is this garbage? And it's that reaction that really piqued my interest back in the day, the very hostile reactions that people would have when you even suggested this just a little bit. Now, I understand we all went through the event in one form or another, most of us watching it on television, but you can see right there how people really just wanted to close the book on this entire thing, shut it right out of their minds. And there's so much information out there that proves we were lied to, especially when it comes to the destruction of the three towers in New York on that day. To me, it's an open and shut case. And we've seen some we've seen some changes in the public. At least I have. I mean, everybody's got a different set of eyes and experiences. But what do you think? Do you think that the public overall has changed to be more receptive, less receptive, or do you think it's the same situation in your view?
I think people are more open to it. I haven't really asked the question to strangers, but I think people are more skeptical. Just like the JFK assassination. I think now it's over. What was the last thing I heard in the mainstream press? So maybe 60% or so of Americans still think now that there was maybe a conspiracy. And I think that because of with technology and the internet, if it took 20 years for most Americans to wake up to what happened with the JFK assassination, with the internet, I think now we're probably three, four, five times faster. The waking up. What the percentage was like, I'm not too sure, but I think also this COVID-19 has actually maybe waking people up. People maybe were apolitical. Now they're asking questions because now there's no way to run anymore. Now we're being masked up. We're being asked to follow curfews. We're going bankrupt. People are losing their businesses. Well, some people are getting really ultra rich. So there's no way to hide from politics anymore. Politics now is affecting everybody's personal life. That maybe, I think people are maybe beginning to ask questions. Or maybe my so-called friend or colleague who mentioned about 9/11 and the JFK assassination and being an inside job, maybe there is some truth because of what's going on with this COVID business. You know, it's like it's breaking a lot of people's lives, and, you know, and doctors are being censored. So, you know, so people maybe are beginning to be more, you know, skeptical, I think, because of the crisis that we're in right now.
Yeah, you know, I predicted it right here on the show, and I can't tell you which episode, but I do remember sitting at this microphone and saying it at some point, is that someday the powers that shouldn't be are going to do something. And I didn't know what it was going to be. I didn't know if it was going to be something that would affect the economy or be a war or whatever, but they're going to step over the line. They're going to do something that affects people at home. They're going to push their luck, and that is when people are going to start waking up to all of this and remember, just like you said, remember that friend that was talking about 9/11, and it's only going to be helpful to us. So actually, this is the time to step up and speak up. When you hear people complaining about the world situation and certain issues affecting our country right now, our entire world, our economy, businesses shut down, when you hear them talking about this, when you hear them asking certain questions about what they're being told on narratives, talk about 9/11 as well. Have them revisit that day. And the seeds that you planted years ago may be sprouting as we speak right now. So this is a good time for 9/11 truth, and I think we just have to bide our time, and I think a lot of truths are going to be revealed when they push this stuff too far. Now, a lot of that planting seeds is through the street activism and the great work of many 9/11 truth groups over the years. And it was sort of like a scattered confederacy of different groups, sometimes working together, sometimes independently. A lot of times they put out YouTube videos showing what they were doing, either confronting politicians and such, or doing street actions. You were part of 9/11 Truth Montreal, as I saw it, as the name was on the internet. Tell us about that and some of the things you guys did.
Yeah, so I think one key event that really sticks out, and I think it was it paid a major impact. I'll say the one in 2010 when we had my first event at a university. I tried with Vanier College in Montreal, but then after I think the administration picked up what it was all about, then they canceled the contract. I tried to approach Concordia University. They gave me the runaround, so I couldn't get in with Concordia University, neither McGill. But then eventually I got a response from UQAM, University of Quebec of Montreal, French-speaking university. And I think the only reason why we got in with UQAM is because the person at the administration, the rental office, just signed a contract, and probably the higher-ups did not pick up on the story. But then once somehow, I think, it made it into the, to the circles in the university, the higher-ups, and then the media picked up on the story. I don't think the university wanted to look like they're against free speech, so it was too late to cancel the contract. So, and it worked for us because then there was a big scandal in mainstream press. So that press picked it up. I think the Toronto Star picked up the story. And it was David Ray Griffin and Richard Gage, who was on a speaking tour. I think they spoke in Toronto and Montreal. So the university here of UQAM, they did say that they'll have to consider their protocols or their policies when renting their hall again, because they can't afford that, not to give room to these conspiracy theorists at a university. But it worked for us because I think it was like 700 or 800 capacity, the theater, and it was, I think, like full house. We had sold out. And I think most people though in the attendance were already those who were already awake to the issue, so they did not need to be convinced. But it was very they were successful. We got media attention. I tried to organize another event at the same university the year after for the anniversary in 2011. But of course, then they didn't want to hear about it. They said, no, no, we're not giving you any access to our university. So then we had to hold the event at a movie theater, and we had Cynthia McKinney to come and speak for that one, and it was sponsored also by Michelle Shostakovsky from Global Research, and I also encouraged Michelle to have Wayne Madsen, because I did read some of his work, and I found it quite interesting. So we had Wayne Madsen come to speak too, and I remember being at the door, and I had ripped the ticket of the former police commissioner of Montreal, Jacques Duchesneau. So, oh my God, it's like Jacques Duchesneau is here, the former police commissioner. you know, so was he just there as a curious onlooker or spying on us? I don't know, but it was, wow, it was really interesting to see a former police commissioner there in attendance. Yeah, so that was a big one too. And of course, we also had we did a 1 hour film. It was called 9/11 Montreal, the next 9/11 targets. That was like a 1 hour film that I put together with other fellow activists here in Montreal. And it was in reference to the city of Montreal signing a contract with Verint for the underground subway system security, video security. And Verint was a subsidiary of, what was that other company? I can't remember the parent company, but they were involved in that scandal. If you remember, that Fox News had covered regarding to these organized crime figures had penetrated the U.S. Phone system, and they were also linked to the art students there, the Israeli art students. And Verint was a company that was delisted from NASDAQ, and the CEO had had robbed their investors to $206 million or something, and then he just took off and hid himself in somewhere in Africa. And last I heard, a few years ago, I think now he's no longer there. I think he's been released, and so I like to think that because we blew the whistle on that suspicious security contract, we probably avoided a bomb attack in the Montreal subway system. So that was like a major thing, and we also went to challenge the Montreal council on that. We had it on camera. We went there in person, and we asked some questions to our governments here in Montreal as to why did they give this contract to this suspicious company that was delisted from NASDAQ, and the CEO, was accused of robbing, money from their investors, and then took off and did our Africa. So that was like a big thing, I think, that we did with that video.
You never know how what you do impacts the world, and a lot of times whatever the impact is unravels away from you. So that is why it's always important to just follow that instinct and do whatever you can, because even if you don't see the results of it, even if you don't know it for the rest of your days, that impact still carries forward and affects what happens. So it very well could have, and I'm sure that all of us have impacted the world in some way for the better regarding our 9/11 activism, even though we didn't even know it. Maybe that brochure you handed to somebody on the street had some impact on public policy. Maybe that person was working for the government, let's say, or working for some congressman's office, and maybe we avoided some horrible legislation because they questioned 9/11 as it was coming up. So that's why we have to just keep on doing whatever it is we are doing, and having faith that our efforts are not in vain, that the impact of our work is felt everywhere. Now, why is it important what happened on 9/11 still in 2020?
In my opinion, it's because if we don't stop them, then it'll just continue going. And I think 9/11 false flag terrorism, I think it should be part of required reading in high school. I think false flag terrorism and stuff, it should be part of what we learn in high school. How people should be vigilant and how governments could orchestrate terrorism against their own, to subvert democracy and their institutions. You know, when I learned about 9/11, it just maybe a few years later, then I realized, oh, wait a minute, but then what about the JFK assassination? What about Martin Luther King assassination? It goes, this is not like an event that just started today, but this is there's a precedence. So then I started reading about JFK assassination, Martin Luther King, the Oklahoma City bombing. Was, oh my God, World War II. A lot of stuff was that. That but how Wall Street, you know, financed the Nazi regime. So I was, oh my God, this is like this goes like the rabbit hole just expanded. So, oh my God. So I think it's required reading. And then when I learned about also about NATO terrorism in post World War II, and then that's another thing. But what happened there in Europe, how terrorism was used to subvert the left in Europe. And I remember as a little boy, because I'm a first generation Canadian, and my parents are born in Italy, and my grandfather, I would always say that was it President Aldo Moro in 1979? The mainstream media told us that he was assassinated by the Red Brigades, but he was always saying, no, he was not killed by the Red Brigades. This was a CIA assassination, you know. And so I didn't know what to think about it. But then eventually, when I started exploring 9/11 and false flag terrorism, and then I read Daniel Ganzer's book NATO Secret Armies. Then I was, oh my God, really convinced that my grandfather was right. That yes, Aldo Moro most likely was assassinated by Italian intelligence in cahoots with British and American intelligence. And in my reading of Aldo Moro, it was very similar to the JFK assassination. Aldo Moro went to the United States and he was forewarned by Kissinger that he should not allow communists into his cabinet. And Aldo Moro was a Christian Democrat, I found very similar to John F. Kennedy, and he wanted to bring some stability in Italy. So he wanted maybe to make a compromise, somehow bring a communist into his cabinet. And Kissinger forewarned him, you cannot do that. And then he went back to Italy, and according to the testimony of his wife, he was really distraught after his visit there in the United States, and he wanted to, you know, finish his political career as soon as possible, but then unfortunately he was abducted by these Red Brigades, and for a month he disappeared and was found dead in the was he found dead in the luggage in the trunk of a car somewhere there in Italy. And after reading Daniel Ganzer's book and also coming across Webster Tarpley's book, and because he speaks also Italian, I think Webster Tarpley, I was convinced, yeah, exactly, Aldo Moro was assassinated by the intelligence services. So you know, it's like, so I think that this false flag should be a thing required reading in high school.
Absolutely, it's a big part of history, and it's something that we need to know more about. Well, we are out of time here on this show, Michael. Thank you for all of your work that you've done for the cause and any work you do again in the future, and thank you for coming on 9/11 Freefall today.
Well, great. Thanks for the opportunity, and I wish all the best to the folks from Mark Architects and Engineers for Now Live in Truth. And I really appreciate what their work, and it was a great time meeting Richard Gage when we had him here in Montreal twice.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, and every other Sunday night on BBS Radio at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele. Have a great week. Good luck.